It's time for Smart Money Moves with Helena J. Connolly. Come on, everybody. Smart Money Moves.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hump Day. Ready to get started with this week's Smart Money Moves with Helena. I am so excited, as always, to be here with you guys today. I have an amazing special guest, which I will bring her in. We have a wonderful conversation all about home ownership, about real estate investments. We have to make sure we are still doing our smart money moves for 2022. Remember, at the top of the year, we went over 10 things that we need to work on as we get financially fit for 2022. And one of those was to review and decide what needs to be updated and upgraded with your investment portfolio. So last couple sessions, we talked all things cryptocurrency, NFTs, foreign exchange market. Now we're going to take a look into the arm of real estate. And I am, with so much pleasure, going to be able to introduce our special guest, Miss Nikaya Carter, who's going to lead us in that conversation. She is a broker owner, a real estate and mortgage broker owner of Carter and Carter Investments. She is an active realtist as well as realtor. She is the vice president of California Association of Real Estate Brokers. She is the founder of one of my favorite events, Women Elevating Women. She is bringing us this great information from Southern California. Come on in here, Miss Nikaya Carter.
Amen.
Bring us in. Yes. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I am always excited when I get a chance to spend time with her. We met about 5 years ago in the real estate world with one of the things she's going to talk about, our Young Realtist division. There is something you guys called NARAB, which I will have Nikaya bring us, you know, some education about before we jump into this thing. But it's very, very important to understand how the Black home ownership needs to improve. You guys always know I've been telling you guys this story. Forbes magazine, as well as Black Enterprise, both had articles back in 2017, 2019, and now they've got some updated ones saying that the Black net worth, the median Black net worth in 2053 will be zero. So there is a huge conversation that needs to happen and a huge mind shift around us and making sure we're understanding how to build some net worth. And real estate is definitely one of the ways to close that gap. So, Nikaya, tell us a little bit about NARAB, what organization this is, and why it's so important to making sure that investment home ownership is something that we pay very close attention to.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Will do. Thank you for that introduction, and thank you for having me once again. So NARAB is NAREB, okay? Stands for National Association of Real Estate Brokers. Founded in 1947. So yes, this is the 75th year. So for the national conference, we're heading back to Tampa, Florida, where it all started in August. So definitely a monumental year. Actually just realized the same year the NBA got started, because they just did 75 years this past weekend. But it was started because a long time ago, the realtors would not allow Black people to be realtors, right? So during that time, 11 men, one woman went out and started their own organization. And fast forward, we're the oldest, largest Black trade real estate organization in the world. Right. Chapters are literally in every state. There's only a couple state chapters, though, that's big enough to have a state chapter. One is California and the other one is Texas as well. So we're broken up. So there's a national body. There's a state body. I am actually the regional vice president for the state body called CAREB, C-A-R-E-B, California Association of Real Estate Brokers. So we're broken up. Since the state is so large, there's four regional vice presidents to cover different sections. All right. And then from there, we also have local chapters. The local chapter locally in Los Angeles is called the Consolidated Board of Realtors. That was founded shortly after NARAB in 1949. Okay. So that is the oldest chapter that we both are a part of, which is actually where we met. Yes. And then there's some affiliates as well. All right. So there's a national level, state level, local level, and then there's the affiliates. One affiliate is the Women's Council. And there's another affiliate called the Young Realtors Division that was founded in 1996. Okay. And so with that said, from there, there's committee breakdowns. There's all types of, you know, there's a board positions, there's leadership positions. But the actual whole entire point is, you know, Black homeownership matters, right? So democracy and housing, right? We do things, we go to the state capitals to try to change the laws. Recently with the student loan, normally when you qualify for a home and you have student loan debt, they normally calculate the 1%. Well, we had an active role in getting that reduced. So now it's only 0.5%, which is huge. That doesn't sound like much, but that's huge when it comes to actually getting approved, because now you can afford more house.
Absolutely.
Right? So that's just kind of one of the things that NARAB has his hand in. It's also great just on a networking standpoint, partnership standpoint, just to really network and really have, I've closed several transactions where everyone was Black, which is amazing. Right. From the real estate broker like myself to the seller of the property, to the buyer, to the inspector, to the appraiser. Right. The whole transaction. And that's just really amazing as well. So I really love NARAB. I'm indebted to NARAB. And I'm actually going to be the incoming president for the Young Realtors Division of L.A. As of officially next week after we're installed. So I'm super excited about NARAB.
I am excited for you as well. I am. When we started our partnership, what is that, 5-6 years ago, it was just really about getting to, you know, have more conversation around Black home ownership. And I know one of NARAB's big pushes, I think it was maybe 4 years ago, which was, I think it was what, two and five?
2 million and five.
2 million and five, which is 2 million Black homeowners in 5 years, was the nationwide push.
Absolutely.
That was a huge thing to actually become a part of and, you know, work with people, get the word out, let people know that they can afford to buy homes, because there's a lot of people who don't think they can, don't know where to start. Have no clue who to even look for as far as, you know, a realtor. What's the difference, you know, between a realtor and an agent and an owner and all those different things? It's a very fearful conversation for people quite often. And so just being able to make the partnerships and start that conversation, because on our show, we always talk about the paradigm shift, the mindset. You can be wealthy. You should be wealthy. It's not about paying someone else's mortgage. It's about becoming prepared so that you can pay for your own mortgage, right? So that you're building equity. I always give my story. I'm very excited to, you know, share this. I've been in my house literally 10 years. 10 years this month. I got my key. No, next month, 10 years, I got my key. And the equity that is built in my home in the last 10 years is unheard of. So it is truly, 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 it has the potential of being a huge investment for people if we understand how to get our foot in the door. Now, I know NARAB has a couple other things that they're focusing on right now, right? With women in investing, right? So not that we don't love everybody, but just talk a little bit about that pillar before we jump into these questions that I know a lot of our listeners wanted to address. So tell us a little bit.
You know, I'm all about the women, right? Yes. So, but yes, so our national president now, Ms. Lydia Pope, she introduced 5 NARAB pillars for the next couple of years. One is faith-based, right? So really diving into the churches, so on and so forth to really inspire. Like you said, it is a mind, it's a mindset and a mind shift. Every consultation I have, there is some fear factor in there, right? Absolutely. And always find myself motivating and encouraging even along the way, because it is a process as well that you have to trust. All right. So I'm sorry, back to the faith-based. So it's faith-based is one of them. Secondly, like you just said, it's women investing in real estate. Okay. So that's a women initiative. It's not only educating our clients that we may come across, but it's also educating us as practitioners, how we can start investing ourselves. So last week, they had a series with the Wire Initiative, and it was talking about our own NARAD members who have used Airbnb as a way to make money. So they buy a property, or either you can actually rent one, right? And then using Airbnb to make some money. Absolutely, right?
You don't have to own the property, but you're still able to Airbnb and make an investment profit.
Amazing.
I've heard that just recently, and I just blew it off, but wow.
No. Don't blow it off. So one of our realtors said, she lives in San Diego. She purchased her home. Her mortgage was $1,200 a month, and her office rent was like $900 a month. She has an extra house in the back that she rents periodically. Maybe it's, you know, maybe on the weekends, people come into town. Mm-hmm. And she said on an annual basis, it's at about $40,000. So she affords her mortgage, she affords her office space, and has a little extra, all because of Airbnb. Right. Wow. So that was definitely a great vehicle. But that's just one example of what they bring and what they present as far as that initiative. The other is diving into small businesses, right? Diversity and inclusion. That's been a big push, you know, especially back, you know, from, you know, everything that went on in 2020. So much went on, I feel like, in that year. The fourth one is multi-generational wealth building, right? So the millennials, I don't know if you guys know, are the number one home buyer. 67%, okay, which is
I find that so hard to believe, but then I don't, because they do move quicker than us Gen, you know, everybody else, right?
I find that really incredible. I find that very hard to believe. I only know one millennial, two millennials that are buying homes, and I don't see it. I do not see it at all. Not even this much.
It's one thing. I have a gentleman that I work with that I met through another of my realtors partners, and he is 22 years old out of Milwaukee. And he went from owning zero properties to owning over 10 properties from 22 to 23 years old.
And he's Gen Z. He's not even a millennial.
Exactly. Right. And so when you think, I was going to say, what, so the millennial, this, I always get this wrong, but because I'm on the cusp, right? Born in 1981. 1981 is the cusp of millennials. And so I just turned 40. So I guess it's 40 to maybe 30. So the 30-year-olds are the ones that are considered the millennials. And I can see 30-year-olds. That a lot of them that I do know that are trying to get into homes and are doing some purchases. But NARAD had a push at one point in time. It was called House Then Car, right? Their purpose
was and now that slipped into the NARAD Millennial Movement.
See?
Yeah. So we didn't change the name and named it after the millennials, right? So although you're not seeing it, they are the number one home buyers, because what happens is they get out of school, right? And they get these higher paying jobs. I think that our generation before just kind of was like, okay, you know, I'm going to get this job. Maybe it's going to pay me $40,000, $50,000 a year and I'll work my way up. No, they come out with this entitlement of like, we're going to get, pay me $80,000 or I'm not, or pay me $100,000. I need to make six figures straight out of college. And a lot of them do, right?
It's a lot of tech work.
A lot of IT, lot of real trades, really. Because in reality, they probably need to go to college. They could have went to a trade school to learn about half the things that they are doing right now. Right. But with that said, when you are qualifying for a home, you don't have to have that 2-year work history if you're straight out of college and we see that offer letter of that salary. So that's what's helping them as well.
Oh, really? Okay. So wait. So if you're fresh out of college, you have to have graduated, or you just have to be fresh out of college?
You have to graduate.
Okay. So graduated with a salary offer on the table, then you don't need the 2 years experience, or 2 years
employment, because employment. The guidelines count your education as your experience.
Wow. Okay. All right. Jen, whatever's you are that are just getting out of college, that is really good information to know, because if you can do it as quickly as possible. That's something that we have to be able to do. So, okay. Talking about, you know, speaking about starting, wait, did you finish the pillars?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Number five is the government relations and the advocacy piece I already spoke on. So those are the five pillars.
Okay. And that's a huge piece. I know we had which election was that? Was that the 2020 election? There was something where we had a whole conversation on those two ballot pieces to understand.
Yes, the different propositions. Yeah, I think that was back 2019. Yeah, those were pretty huge.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of work that needed to be done for us to be able to make proper decisions informed and have access to housing. So there's a lot of things that somebody needs to be working on. That's not my expertise. So I love to see that that's a particular arm. So if we speak about, you know, the start, right? Everybody wants to know how to start, where to start, right? Do you use some sort of checklist with the people that you work with, the workshops that you provide that people can have in place when they're ready to get started with housing?
Absolutely. So it's basically when you're starting or thinking about getting pre-approved, pre-qualified, right? Four things. All right. I look at your income, which we kind of just touched on, the history of it. Want to make sure 2 years or more, not at the same exact employer. A lot of people get that confused. However, it needs to be in the same industry at least. All right. And if it's not, it needs to make sense. Okay. So example, if you work for a fire department, right, for a year, and then now you are a janitor, I need to have some type of relation there. Some type of like, were you a director of community relations at both places? Then that makes sense to me, right? So it just needs to make sense, but not same employer, but same industry. And like we just already said, if you graduated from school, then that will count as well. You would not need that. Okay. So your income, I would say, income wise, if you do want to stay in California, you do want to stay in Los Angeles, California, right?
Colette is scratching her head as she just moved out.
We want to get you as close to six figures as we can, truthfully, honestly, for you to really afford it. And it also depends on what you're willing to, like my clients, it's like, I tell them you can't have everything. You can't tell me I want to live in Culver City. I want a payment to be $2,500 a month. First of all, I'm going to stop you right there.
There. That's your apartment in Culver City.
I'm saying, but this is what I hear. Because a lot of people are really, they're not realistic or they don't understand, right? Which is what I try to do is educate so that we can understand how this works, right? And the market that you're in, Culver City is something different than Compton, right? You know what I'm saying? I probably can get you over there in Compton, but that's a different seat. But it's okay.
Yeah,
right?
They think it's the C word. The C word.
Yes.
The C word. I can go anywhere. Compton, Culver City. Okay.
Culver City. Or I can take you out to Fulton.
Yeah, I was going to say Calabasas.
Yeah.
Calabasas. See?
Yeah. It's still a C.
Calabasas is way more expensive, but it's still a C, right? So it depends on what we're talking about, right? So back to the four things. So income is definitely one of them. Okay. Credit. I need to know your credit score. The higher your credit score, the lower your interest rate. And the lower your payment. This is a monthly transaction. The most important thing is that payment. What can you afford? A lot of people are fixated on the interest rate, right? But you shouldn't be. Interest rates literally change every single day. Mm-hmm. No joke. Wake up every morning, there's a new interest rate, right? Mm-hmm. Right? And so even sometimes throughout the day, it almost reminds me of the weather. The other day it was 90. Now it's 56. Tomorrow will be, who knows? The other day it started raining for 5 minutes.
Poor last night. Yes.
Right? So I just never know, right? So my thing is though, okay, what is your pay? What can you afford? So if I make your payment $3,500, shouldn't matter what the interest rate is. Because you can afford that $3,500. Like you pay that rent every month, right? For whatever you're paying. As long as I tell you, hey, your interest rate may be 4.25 right now. Oh my God, in 2020, it was 2.25. It was, but we weren't talking in 2020. We're talking in 2022, right? So things are different. But still, the higher your credit score, though, the lower your rate will be. And you can also buy down your rate if you wanted to. Right?
So let me ask a question
on that. Yeah.
Is there a minimum credit score that we need to have?
580, actually, to buy a house going FHA. Right? FHA. If you want down payment assistance, say again.
FHA is what?
FHA is the government style loan that you put a lower down payment, 3.5% down. Yeah. Okay. Most people, first-time home buyers, down payment assistance programs, they go FHA.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
But 680 is where you want to be. I would target 680 if you're trying to get down payment assistance.
Okay.
Third will be your monthly debt. right? And I'm talking what shows up on your credit report. I'm talking car notes. I'm talking student loans that we talked about, student loan debt. I'm talking any personal loan. Do you owe the IRS? Have you filed bankruptcy? Any of those things, we definitely have to know. Because again, this is a monthly transaction. So I need to know exactly what you're committed to already monthly, because that factors into your DTI, debt to income ratio, right? So we have to factor in what you make, what you're already committed to find out how much house you can afford. If that makes sense.
Is there a minimum DTI?
So the banks won't allow you to go. Some programs can go up to 50%. Standard FHA, no down payment assistance, can take you up to 57%.
Okay.
But most people in down payment assistance, we're going to go 50. If you go conventional, we're going to drop you to 43%. So it all depends on how I structure your loan. So I don't want to get too complicated because I don't want to lose some people here. But
oh no, I have questions. I'm going to get them all together, of course. I'm listening.
And then the last thing, it will be your savings. How much money? I always ask this question. How much money do you have saved towards the purchase of your home? Some people say zero. Some people say I got 15,000. Some people say I have 20,000 in my Horizon account I can take out. So then I go further and say, okay, great. You have any maybe life insurance policies that has cash value you can pull out, right? You have any other assets, a 401k, a 403? You know, I go through all to see exactly this. Believe it or not, people don't even remember.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I have a 401k from a job. I'll be like, we got to find your money.
I love finding that money. You know that. What can we do with your money?
We got to make some smart money moves, right? We got to make sure you keep track of your money and know exactly where it is, right? So those are the four things I ask. And normally from there, I'm able to weed out who's actually ready, right? And who's going to be ready. Because to me, you're always a buyer. It's just about when and where. Because everybody can buy a house. So we already talked about some C's. I'll take you to Bakersfield if you need to buy your first property. Because like you said, it's going to grow in equity. And maybe in 2 years, you can pull out and then you can buy the house closer in to LA. But you have to have some type of sacrifice, and you can't have everything the first time around, right? And so I try to still come up with a solution for all my clients. And if so, we can, and if not, by yourself, let's talk about who can help you.
Yeah.
Right?
The reality check they need to sometimes get before the process, right? As the initial check is, right? So you mentioned something right before you started doing your four things, and you said pre-approval / pre-qualified. What's the difference? What's more important?
So pre-qualification is something I can do. Sometimes a realtor can do as well. Well, let me clarify this. So I'm a mortgage broker, which means I have a whole different license. So that way I can talk about interest rates. I can talk legally about all the money stuff. All right. Real estate, but I also hold a real estate broker's license, right? Which means I can also, you know, transact and go through the process of a real estate transaction. All right. So I said that to say is that any real estate agent can pre-qualify you, which means I'm going to ask you just those questions I just did. You're going to give me the basic answers. Then I'm going to kind of jot it down and kind of even see. Once you answer those questions, I'm going to be able to know. For example, if you told me, how much money do you make? $30,000 a year. I can stop you right there. You don't have to go to the lender, right? Because we're going to have to figure out what we need to do to get that income up. Or the next question is, okay, so where do you want to live? Maybe their plan is to go out of state. Oh, okay, well, great. I can go ahead and put you one of my partners out of state, right? So that's kind of goes into the pre-qualification. If they say, anybody that's kind of talking to you could pre-qualify you. A pre-approval is when you're at the lender. We're going to actually run your credit. We're actually see all the numbers. We're going to actually ask for the paycheck stubs. We're going to ask for your last two W-2s. Right. We're going to really actually get all the paperwork from you. Take a look at it. Run your credit. See your monthly debts that pop up on your credit report and actually pre-approve you. And then from there, that's when you're ready to actually go shopping for the house.
And that pre-approval you said is with particular lenders.
Any lender. So anybody can they can go to a lender I prefer. They can that I prefer and or refer. If they want down payment assistance, they can come to the broker I work for. Some people have the relationships with their current already credit unions or banks, right? Anybody that they choose to work with, you know, they definitely can. So,
okay. So I'm pre-qualified, right? I fit the bill on, you know, the 2 years, the credit score is where it needs to be. My DTI is decent. My savings happens, right? When it comes to how much savings you need to have to put down, is there a particular amount? I know you mentioned FHA and conventional loans. payments, right? So how much do people need to have to put down, what percentage, you know, in order to qualify for whatever particular house? Because I think that allows us to weed ourselves out quickly, right? If I know I don't have this particular percentage for this $1 million home, then start over and look somewhere else. So is there a percentage, or what are those conventional and FHA mean?
So conventional 3% is the down payment. All right. FHA is 3.5%. There's an additional about 2% for closing costs, right? So it's going to run you a total of 5.5% to 6% of the purchase price. Now, to get your purchase price, though, I need to get that number from the pre-approval, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, so let's say it's 500,000, it's going to be 5.5% of 500,000. Okay. But mm-hmm. then we have the down payment assistance conversation. Mm-hmm. So there's so many down payment assistant programs, though, right? So I'm going to ask you, okay, are you interested in a grant program? There's some where that you have to pay back. Are you in a certain profession where the grant can be forgiven or the loan can be forgiven right away, mm-hmm. right? So we'll dig deeper into, okay, what programs are best for you? However, every program comes with a cost.
Yes.
Believe it or not, right? So do you want to pay that cost? Right, as well. So let's say like GSFA, for example, mm-hmm. that stands for Golden State Financial Authority. That's a down payment assistance I can use when someone's buying a duplex in California. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. One of the only ones that has a high enough loan limit. And that's the thing. So they have loan limits. Some have income limits. Some have county limits. Right. And so I really have to have the conversation on what you're really looking for. If your scenario fits into that particular program.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So GSFA, for example, you can get up to 5%, but they, guess what? They govern the interest rate. So let's say you're like, Nikaya, I want 5%. I want to go GSFA. I want the most down payment assistance I can get. I want 5%. Okay, great. We checked the rates earlier today. It was 5.125%. Number one, you got to agree to that, which means your payment's going to be higher, but you're getting money, free money, yeah. Right? So you have to make that decision, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, my payment's going to be a little bit higher, but I'm going to have some money toward my down payment. So mm-hmm. that's getting over the interest rate. Secondly, if the lender, depending on where you go, they're going to charge you up to 2%. They could. Some okay. may charge you 1%, 1.5 of the 5%. So in reality, you may end up getting 5, you may end up getting 3%. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's 3% less if you're coming out your own pocket for.
Got it.
Right. So it's almost like I have to present these and let the clients make a decision among themselves and figure out exactly what's the best scenario moving forward. Because you can go ahead and push forward. Let's say you're a teacher, right? It'll be forgiven as soon as we close escrow, which means you don't have to worry about paying it off 3 years from now, right? Which means you're going to get that free money right then, right? You could potentially refi out of that 5% rate, you know, 9 to 12 months later, right? So you're only paying that higher amount for a couple of months, but you got this, you know, $25,000 in your pocket because of it, right? Or like I said, if the payment is comfortable for you, it shouldn't matter what the interest rate is. If you can still afford that payment, that then you go ahead and stay in it until you're ready to sell or refi or do something else.
So you mentioned, and I was going to bring that up, you mentioned if you're an educator, right? I was an educator when I purchased my home. So I did exactly what you said, right? Okay. I have one of the programs, but at that time, they did not forgive it as soon as I got it. They over 5 years, they paid off all of my student loans for my BA.
That's a win-win. That was a smart money move, baby.
What other programs out there for people who are listening in, you know, may have these kind of programs that they don't even know to look for? Educators, I know, is one. Is it public service people? Who are some of those groups of people who have these other programs?
So, they have a city program.
Okay.
Work in the city of at the city of LA, not within the city, right? At the city of LA. There's a county program. You work within the county of Los Angeles. As far as professions, there are anybody in education, not even just teachers, right? So you can be the janitor, you could be the aide, you can be whatever position, but just at within education. Okay.
Is that
any level?
Oh, good. Okay. Okay.
Yep. And then we got the fire departments, we have the police, okay? We have medical now that was added 2020. And I believe
when you
that
say,
is it.
When you say medical, what do you mean?
Like a nurse, a doctor. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Lab tech, right? Okay. Anything in the medical field.
Okay. And so
if you, like you mentioned, if you, let's say, do the low percentage down, I know there's an extra fee that mm-hmm. is called mortgage insurance that's charged to make sure that the lender is protected, right? But
right.
you're saying that you can potentially refinance within 6 months and then get a lower payment. Because that's actually what I did 10 years ago. Of course, mm-hmm. I had no clue what I was doing. So my point, you guys, is don't be afraid to jump in. You may not know all the time, but was able to do that and lower my payment just in the first, I think, 7 months.
Oh, absolutely.
Of being able to, okay, so 3.5%, let's round it to 5%, could potentially be the down payment for a lot of people. Right, depending mm-hmm. on everything that they qualify for. Okay, so right.
But a target number, I tell people, at least 10 to 12,000. You need some type of cushion. Even if I said, you know, all you're gonna pay is your closing costs, right, which is about 9 to 10,000, 2% is like still, you're a homeowner now, right? So it's no mm-hmm. more calling the landlord; you're calling yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you gotta just make sure responsibility is key in home ownership as well.
Yes,
right. So. We got to, like you said, the mindset,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a whole different ballgame, but just be ready for it, you know? Okay. So
is there a place that people out there just, you know, not really wanting to talk to anybody yet, they don't feel confident in that, where they can just go and look, like, to just see what the cost of things are? Because I know the wonderful Zillow is not a friend to most brokers or agents, but is there a place that you would say, you know, take a moment to just go look here and see that could be semi-accurate for people to get their head wrapped around a number? Or do you suggest they go directly to an agent?
The thing is, it's hard to tell because unless you know how to calculate DTI.
Okay.
The thing is, a lot of people just start looking and they kind of be like, well, I saw a property I like. And I'm like, how do you know what you qualify for to make sure that you can even afford that, right? So you have to just make sure you calculate your DTI correctly and know how to do it. And most people are the professionals that know how to do it. And then most people do not charge for that either. And it's no obligation or anything like that for a pre-qualification, right? So, yeah, if you figure out how to just kind of run the DTI, but I would probably just if you want to just think about it, I would say 50% of your monthly gross income is how you calculate it. So let's say you make, pull out a calculator quick, $5,000 a month, $2,500 mm-hmm. would be your max mortgage payment. But from the $2,500, I have to start subtracting your monthly debts.
Mm. Okay. Right? Okay. Because the number that I've heard is 33%. Your mortgage shouldn't be more than 33% of what you gross or what you net. Which one were you just saying? Of what you
gross. We always base everything off gross, although that's not a number that anyone sees.
Exactly.
So, but that's just the guidelines, right? So
if you're just doing a quick calculation out there, then, you know, half your income and then minus your debts that would appear on your credit report.
Correct. And then from there, you come up with the purchase price, which you need a mortgage calculator for that you can, you know, you can Google that or
Rocket Mortgage apps
and stuff for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then from there, whatever that number is left over, you push the payment to that, and then it'll tell you what that purchase price is equal to.
Okay. So what website can they just go look on to see what homes look like, what homes cost?
I would probably go realtor.com.
Realtor.com. Okay. So realtor.com, they can just start looking to see if their neighborhood is even close to their affordability.
Correct. Once you calculate your DTI, that way, from there, you can start kind of see, okay, what's on the market? Is this the neighborhood I would even want to be in based on this purchase price? Do I need to start looking at other cities? So on and so forth.
Okay. So how do you suggest a person pick a realtor, someone to actually work with? Is it just word of mouth referrals or what? Just find a person you like, talk to people? How do I make that choice?
I would say number one, I would say referrals. If you know somebody who did a great job, you have a friend mm-hmm. who was a homeowner, you know, I know people who generational, right? Like, oh, she sold my mama's house. She sold Monty's house, right? Just kind of a family type of real estate professional that they trust, right? Mm-hmm. Secondly, I would probably ask the professional, how long have you been doing this? Do you do it full time? 90% mm-hmm. of licensed agents in California are part-time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. And mm-hmm. so if that's the case, if I have a 9-to-5 and you have a 9-to-5, then, you know, sometimes, like, for instance, I'm full time, right? My clients at work, sometimes open houses are 12 to 3 or 1 to 4. something random, and I will have to go and I either FaceTime for them, or I either do a video, so on and so forth. So you want to make sure that they're available as well. You want to make sure you have a good negotiator as well, right? It's easy to write. That's the easiest part, is writing the contract. Now getting that offer accepted and making sure my client gets through something different.
Okay.
Opening the escrow is great, but closing it, that's a whole nother thing, right? Because something's going to come up. So you want to make sure that that person, you know, has some great, great negotiation skills. And you want to know their record. You know, how many homes have you sold? You know, do you know the area? Are you familiar with the area I want to move to, right? If you ask me about Long Beach, I'm going to know just from the streets you tell me, right? And so you kind of just want to make sure the agent, whatever area you are looking for, is definitely familiar with that area.
Does that show publicly somewhere, the track record of agents?
No.
No. So it's just a conversation.
You can definitely just check and see if they're even licensed. That's another thing. I've came across some, you believe it or not, who are still working who aren't even supposed to be. And you can definitely check that on the Department of Real Estate website, which is the dre.ca.gov.
Okay. So I know, because I've seen you do a ton of presentations. We've been working together for quite some time. And you have a duplex workshop that you help people to understand how not only to become a homeowner, but to also become a landlord. So I always tell myself, I don't have any regrets in life, not one, right? Everything was a lesson. I do wish, however, when I purchased my home, that someone would have had the conversation with me about income property, because that's a whole nother potential avenue of income, right? So two things, right? Before we jump into specifically investment property, income property, I know during your talks, you do I think it's a 6-step process that people can expect to go through when they're trying to purchase, right? Mm-hmm. What is that 6-step process? Tell us, for the listeners, what are the things that happens in this thing that they should be prepared for? How long, and you know, that stuff. You mentioned escrow. I know that's one of them.
Right. Okay. So you're talking about after we've already identified a home and all that good stuff, right?
Yes.
Okay. So basically so you get pre-approved. So we have your pre-approval letter. All right. Mm-hmm. Which means that forms your team, right? So it'll be your agent of choice, your lender of choice, and then yourself, right? So we all work together to make sure that we're, number one, we set your pre-approval. Let's say it's $600,000. So we're only looking at homes $600,000 or less. In this market, I'm going to take it even down further, because we need to be competitive. So we're in a seller's market right now. So really, I'm probably going to go see homes $575,000 and below, so that we can have some room to bid a little bit higher if we need to. So from there, we're going to get your offer. So you're going to identify that you want to write an offer on that property after we do go see it. From there, we are going to write an offer, right? So I need to structure the offer in a way that it gets the most attention, because there's contingencies involved. We can waive those, right? There's three. There's appraisal, inspection, and loan. We can waive a couple of them, so the offer would be even more competitive. We can put more of a down payment, or should I say, it's called an EMD, an earnest money deposit, when you're first entering. Right. So we can do different things to the offer to make it more competitive. Once that offer is accepted, we open up what we call escrow. Escrow is a neutral third party between, you know, everybody. They hold the money. I don't hold your money. Neither does the seller, any of that. It goes directly to escrow. Okay. From there, title does their job as well. Just making sure the title is clean. There's no liens. There's no, you know, expiring like invoices, or should I say, you know, invoices that should have been paid by the seller that's still on the title of the home. They just make sure it's free and clear. Okay. Also, at the same time, we're going to schedule your inspection. We want to make sure you get an inspection of the property, because we can only walk in and see what we see. But the inspector will go on the roof, underneath the house, checking between the walls. They have all kinds of little gadgets that they, you know.
Which you definitely want to know before you say yes. Yeah,
definitely want inspection. You want to check for leaks. You know, they'll turn all the water on at one time. Whoever does that, who turns all the water at one time to see if it's a leak, right? One time they did that, and sure enough, it was a leak. The seller never even knew, because she never cut the water on all at one time, right? And so things like that. So it's very important to do an inspection, okay? And then the appraiser will come out, and that determines the value of the property, right? So if we offered $600,000 and got the offer except, you want to make sure that the house appraises for $600,000, right? So, and if it does not, then we have to negotiate. Okay, well, you offered the seller $600,000. It came back at $595,000. Are you going to give the seller the extra five, or are you going to, do we need to go back, negotiate, and just maybe we can buy that house at 595, right? So like I said, negotiation, everything's negotiable in real estate all the way to the end. And when I say the end, I say the bitter end. So like I said, you need a strong negotiator, right? So after the inspection, it passes, then we do the appraisal, the value is there. And then we're basically going to close. So basically all the things you've been e-signing, unfortunately, you're going to stand with a notary and you're going to see it all again. Yes. But we need your wet signature this time. Right? Yes. So we're going to sign with your actual John Hancock, right? We're going to actually sign all the paperwork. We're going to make sure all the numbers are good. Normally I'm present. Normally your lender is present, your team, right? Yes. To answer any questions you have, the notary is just there to kind of do their third party job. They take all the paperwork, deliver it to escrow. You go and put the remainder, either down payment assistance program comes in and funds. You normally, the buyer normally comes and funds whatever their rest of their portion is. And then the actual bank comes and funds. So that's what we call funding. Once it's funded, and then it's actually recorded with the county recorder, and then we get the keys, and then it's your home.
Such a wonderful process. Colette, I see you have a question.
I do. I was told by someone else that in the programs, the first time buyer program and all those grant programs, I've been told several different things. Is it true that when you have those programs, you don't necessarily have to come in with any cash?
That is, well, FHA requires you to come in with 3.5% of your own money, but you can get a gift letter for that. Right? So when you say cash, I don't know. So does that mean like necessarily your own money? So if I answer that, go ahead.
So if someone is given a grant, to purchase a home, they get the closing costs, they get all of that money that they need. Then they get the first time buyer program, which allows them to get, I don't know, $30,000, $40,000. Mm-hmm. And that goes towards their closing costs, escrow fees, all of these other things. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. So is there a point in that process where the buyer has to come in with their own money to go on top of the money that's granted?
Right. So it depends. So if you go conventional, then there's not a requirement for the buyer to come in with their own funds. If you go FHA, you have to have 3.5% of your own money. Okay. But you can receive a gift because that's technically your own money, right? But you have to come with that down payment. For example, I just closed a client for a duplex. She got a seller credit of $10,000, but that was way over in addition to a rebate. But she was over, so which means she had leftover credit she couldn't even use because of the FHA 3.5% requirement, right? So
your own money from your bank.
Your own money. But somebody can gift it to you.
Yes.
Otherwise, okay. It has to be your own money. It can't come from the down payment assistance program.
Oh, I see. It cannot. Okay.
Right. Or overage of seller's fees or anything like that. It has
or
to be
seller's credits.
Okay. Right.
Okay. So is that's over and above whatever is granted?
Correct.
Okay. So in that case, where does it go? Does that reduce the amount of the grant? Or does that reduce the amount of the purchase price? Or does that reduce the amount of anything? Or is it just in limbo?
You actually just lose it. Sounds crazy. Or you get creative like I had to do and come up with ways where, let's say, super hypothetically, there's a contractor that you want to pay to do some work, right? So there's a way that escrow maybe can just pay the contractor because you were going to pay them anyway in a very hypothetical situation, right? So
they've done that.
So yeah, so creative way. This is where your agent and the person you choose to work with comes into play on how to not have you lose that money. Yeah,
and this is all in the FHA
world, right?
Yes, FHA world, because that's where most first time home buyers are.
Got it.
Okay, so. The creative ways that people were buying homes back in 5, 6, 7, and 8 that was instrumental in breaking down the system that we all know about. Mm-hmm. Those creative ways are no more allowed.
Well, back then, it literally, you can state. They went off your, they went off literally your word. So if you told me, you know what, I work at McDonald's and I make $30 an hour, I'll be like, okay.
Right.
Literally, it called, they called it stated because you literally stated it. So it was just like no proof. It was back then. It was just so, it was, it's still amazing to me how that even was allowable.
Right. And I was working in the industry back then. And
oh, you were. Okay.
Yeah, and people were buying things that they knew they were not going to have 2 years down the road. But when folks started going to jail, they had to.
They had to. Now we have to source every amount of money. That's another thing. Yes. So you can't, so a lot of people have mattress money. Okay.
Yep.
And so you can't just go drop $10,000 in your account, especially during a transaction, and say, oh, it was at home and my mattress. That's not going to work right now in 2022. All right. We're going to have to source it. And so, and if you cannot source it, the underwriter will not include it. And you're going to have to go get, it sounds crazy. You're going to have to go find and prove and find another 10,000 and show us the trail of it. Right. So it's really, really strict. The underwriting process is a whole nother process.
And it's a process. What happened in 2008 from having friends. And I'd rather be way crazy that way than what happened before. Because stated income, I was not near the profession, the industry. Yeah. It just made no sense to me. It made no sense. Dr. Hathaway, you have a question for us?
Yes, good afternoon, Nikhail. Well, really great to see you. I'm also wondering, when you mentioned having the stated income, I know that in what was 2008, I stated my income, and I also had to prove all of the information and the income of receipts and statements. It took forever, but I actually have stable income, and they still ask all those extra questions. So it's interesting how that developed over
time. It just depends on who you work with.
Right, exactly. Right.
No, and also even with us, now we're licensed. Back then, you didn't even have to have a license.
Wow. Right.
And, so
And I work with people in Dallas who are part of NARAB in Dallas and Houston. And the process is, it's a little different. It's a little different. But I know that the processes for getting into a home, buying a home, they are basically and fundamentally the same across the country. But there are little nuances in each part of the country where some things are part of the process and other things are not.
Absolutely. Different
states. So one of our board members teaches real estate at Northlake College in Dallas. And she is the only, she has the only real estate class either in Texas or in that region.
Nice.
Yeah. And she's one of our board members, but, it's different in Texas. It's very different in Texas. They want people in homes in Texas and because they are reachable, they want people in homes.
Right. They're moving there, Arizona for sure.
Oh yeah. People are moving away from here, going to those places. Please don't go. Stay right here.
The second part of my question had to do with getting information up. You mentioned earlier something about the life insurance policies being a part of the asset or the debit. How does that affect one's this particular investigation of the report?
Well, I know Helena could probably go into that, but I was just saying, like, one of the questions I do ask, because some life insurance policies has a cash value component where you're able to pull cash out and use that as, you know, toward the purchase of your home. Because some people don't realize that they do have some assets. They might be, oh, I just have a life insurance policy, right? But maybe Helena can probably, there is a life insurance policy set up in that way, correct?
Yeah, any of your cash value policies that have cash in them, if they're funded correctly,
Life insurance is one of the biggest ways to create an infinite banking system, your own personal banking system, if you fund your cash value policies first. I love term insurance. I also love cash value policies because, again, I can pull the cash value, right, and use it to do the investing, which we're going to, you know, shift briefly before we close out today about investing in properties and still be earning money in my life insurance for money that's been removed to invest myself, make a profit, put it back. It's my own bank. So that's the infinite wealth conversation, the infinite banking, if you funded your cash value policies correctly. Yes, you are definitely able to have access to that money. And like you said, Nikea, that makes sense. You're able to use that as assets that help you to qualify even more, become better on paper in the purchase process. So yes, that's a good conversation, a long one that we can have. But let me ask you a question, okay? Talking about investing, right? Mm-hmm. I know you talked about fear just with the home buying process personally, but if I'm looking into, let's say, I know you specialize in duplexes, right? Making sure people are able to get into duplexes. What's the benefit of becoming a landlord in either a duplex or a triplex or, you know, fourplex, any of that?
No, absolutely. And let me tell you why I focus in on duplexes, because number one, you cannot get down payment assistance over two units.
Okay.
Number two, you can't only put down 3.5% once you jump in over a certain amount. You can do it up to 3.5% one to four, mm-hmm. but five or more, you cannot. It's going to turn into more like 10 to 15% down.
Okay.
All right. But the duplex though does qualify for down payment assistance. So a lot of the clients are interested in that. That's why I kind of keep it at the duplex.
As long as it's no more than two units.
Correct. Correct. And then answering your question. So I would say there's pros and cons of becoming a landlord, right? I would say one of the pros is definitely your mortgage is subsidized. Right. So you're not paying that entire payment. Mm-hmm. So let's say from my client just now, she actually bought her duplex $500,000 in LA. It does need work, but it is something that, you know, she did buy. But she won't be responsible for that full payment because she's going to actually be getting rent from the actual tenant. Right. Mm-hmm. So your mortgage is subsidized. Right. It's a tax deduction. Right? It's absolutely a tax deduction. So you can write off the interest, all the fees, all the repairs, all the improvements you did, right? Mm-hmm. That's definitely a benefit, right? And you own an investment property, right? Mm-hmm. So you have this vehicle, it's going to gain equity. Just the regular kind of benefits of home ownership in general obviously still applies when you buy a duplex. Mm-hmm. I would say some of the cons are, you know, the tenants. The tenants, they help you subsidize, but on the flip side, we can have tenant delays. You know, the condition of the property they may leave it in, the improvements, you know, that you need to make when it comes to that other unit. All right. Another thing is the responsibility. Like, you're a small business owner pretty much at this point. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So you have to be ready. Like we talked about in the beginning, your mindset, your mentality. This is your business now. You're the owner. Mm-hmm. Right. And don't get me wrong. If you're not all the way ready, that's the conversation I had yesterday. She wants to buy her second, but then she wants to rent out her first, but she's scared of how to manage that first one. What mm-hmm. am I going to do? But so you can, I offered her, you know what? An option is a property management company.
That's what I wanted to ask. Yeah.
Property management. Yeah. Like, you know, you will pay them a portion, but it takes away that fear. It takes away of that responsibility.
Even if you have to pay for that.
Yeah. But they will take care of collecting your rent. They'll send you the rent check. They have their book of business of repair, like plumbers and painters, whatever you may need for the improvements of your property, right? So there's different ways. You also have a home warranty in place when you do close. You can keep renewing that and utilizing that, right? So what that does is that you can use their book of business, but you're only paying a certain fee, whether that's $40 to $60 for them to come out and fix the problem versus paying, you know, $200 to $300, maybe $5,000, depending on, you know, what it is, you know? So there's different things. So that's what I would say with some of the pros and the cons of, you know, becoming a landlord.
Question, as far as the property manager, You can have a property manager if you're living on the premises and if you're not living on the premises. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely. Like some people don't even want, it's only two units. Some people like, I don't even want them to know I'm the owner. I want to act like a regular tenant and I just want to be, you know.
Absolutely. So yes. That makes sense. And then, okay. So then with, you said you pay, you know, some sort of fee to them in order to run your business.
Yeah, normally it's about 10%. Okay. Of course, if something goes wrong, of course, they're probably going to pass you the bill for that. But yeah, it's definitely worked out. Yeah, with different property management companies.
And then as we wrap up, I have one last question. For qualifying for this duplex, right, or triplex or fourplex, but for duplex, are you able to use the tenant's current rent payment as a part of your income?
Yes. So 75% of the current tenant's rent or 75% of the market rent. Okay. We want it to be market because a lot of these duplexes I come across, like I keep using her as example, but that other man was paying $550 for rent, but he had been there for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So 75% of 550 is not too much to be added. Right. Yes. But the market rent of a one bedroom in that location was more like $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit different. So yes, the answer is you use 75% of either the actual tenant or the market rent. Now, when I pre-qualify you or pre-approve you, I'm going to use the market rent because I'm going to assume that one of them is going to be vacant or hopefully both, right? Depending on your goals, right? Okay. So the answer is yes, 75% of that extra. And that actually helps you qualify for even more.
That's what I was going to say.
Extra income.
That adds to your income, which is absolutely trying to get higher income, lower DTI, higher credit score in order to be able to qualify.
But the higher the purchase price, what else goes up? Your payment. So yes. Again, it's about that payment. What are you comfortable with? Even without your tenant, because at the same time, you can't rely on the tenant.
Mm.
You can, but you can't, right? There may be a time where you're in between tenants, so you got to pay that 1 month. That's why I said you got to have a cushion. It's definitely a responsibility, right? So you have to keep kind of every scenario in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. So wrapping up, right? You got to make sure that you're ready, right, to qualify by looking at or having 2 years of income in the same industry. Doesn't have to be the exact same job, but making sure your credit is, and we're going to have a special guest on here talking all about credit, how to leverage credit and do all of that stuff in the near future. But having that at 580, preferably 680, your DTI being, you know, as small or low as it possibly can be, and having a good amount of savings in your account in order to use as a down payment, but also to look good, right?
Absolutely.
So if we're looking for the income property, yes, duplex is a great way to go because you're getting your mortgage subsidized, building equity, and being able to make a profit in usually in that month, depending on how things are set up. So I'm appreciative about the conversation, because I think it's very, very important for all of us to begin shifting our mind that way. And I know there's people out there that says, I don't want the, you know, hassle of owning or whatever that may be. We have to find a way as Black people to not have a net worth of zero by 2053. And home ownership is one way to be able to do that. Owning your own, owning investment property, whether you're fixing it and flipping it, whether you're holding on to it, whether it's in California, out of California, we have to have the opportunity to buy back the block. We have to have an opportunity in order to, you know, create generational wealth for our family, our kids, our kids' kids. And owning home is a really, really great way to do that. So all those of you guys listening, get your stuff together. Find that realtor of your choice. Nakia Carter of Carter and Carter Investments is an amazing one. I've definitely referred people her way. It's just important to have someone, like she said, that has the experience, knows the area you're looking for, and is willing to go to bat for you and negotiate for you, because it is a game out there and it needs to be won by you in order to do that. So you guys, that is our show for this week, Smart Money Moves with Helena. Thank you so much again, Ms. Nakia Carter. Very, very happy to see you and always have you share with everybody that we work with. The information is powerful. So thank you guys again and see you next time.